who support the Israeli genocide, use their electoral power, use the power of the press and the ability to organize, and the institutions of society, labor unions, church groups, local clubs, student groups. There's all kinds of institutions in the U.S., local, state, and national, that are re-emerging and re-finding, rediscovering the power they have, which they first discovered, I believe, at least in my lifetime, in the anti-Vietnam War movement in the late 60s, early 70s. I lived through that as a college student, and it was very slow in the beginning. And this is what's important for everybody who's interested in this to understand. We're not going to get dramatic victories tomorrow, but the trend is in the direction of more justice for all involved. And one day, hopefully, it will result in Israelis and Palestinians living in their peaceful states without apartheid, without a genocide, without racism, and without barbaric policies supported by Western governments.
You're listening to Rami Khoury, War or Peace in the Middle East. This is Independent Alternative Radio. For copies of this program, call us 1-800-444-1977 or go online our website, alternativeradio.org. 20% of Israel's population is Arab-Palestinian. What is their situation like? I believe they have representatives in the Knesset, the Israeli parliament. Is that correct?
They do, and this includes my family in Nazareth and other parts of Israel who never left, Christian Palestinians. They have the ability to form political parties. They tended initially to gravitate to the communists and the leftists. And then slowly you had some Arab and Palestinians who are Israeli citizens working closely with Jewish Israelis from Jewish Israeli political parties working together. These tended to be leftist groups, but they've always been structured in a way that they would not have any serious impact, that they would always remain a minority. They can get maybe 5-8% of the vote in the Knesset. So they haven't been able to generate the kind of impact that people would want them to have. So they focus more on trying to lobby for reducing the structural official discrimination and racism that has defined Israel since its birth and in 48. For instance, making sure that social security benefits, electricity expansion, schooling opportunities, all of these fundamental issues of life can be applied equally to Arab and Jewish Israelis. And that's where they tend to focus their efforts. And they've made a lot of progress, but Israel is still officially a society for the Jewish people. The Arabs who are citizens of the state of Israel do not have totally equal rights for various reasons, the main one being that Zionism was designed to create a state for the Jews, not a state for everybody who lived in Palestine. They wanted the Jewish, they tried to get a Jewish, pure Jewish state by driving the Palestinians out in 47, 48, and even before that. But it proved impossible. And the tenacious manner in which Palestinians have continued to resist this century, if even more than a century, it started in the late 1890s, but over a century, almost a century and a quarter, of Zionist attempts to Judaize Palestine and de-Arabize it, de-Palestinize it. The struggle to stay there and fight for our rights politically, economically, morally, and militarily, this has been one of the most heroic, dramatic, moving episodes of modern national movements, which, of course, the Western media has never recognized in the same way they recognized the, for instance, and rightly so, the Jewish struggle to oppose fascism in Europe and things like that. And you see it again, the media has been a critical element for the Zionist propaganda to achieve its goals. And you see the glorification in the media of Israel, but more than the glorification, you see the humanization. So if you just watch TV now, whatever stage we are in the ceasefire and the prisoner exchanges and the hostage exchanges, you see it every day. It's really disgraceful for American media ethics that it's heavily, heavily tilted, like 85-90%, to stress the Israelis' rights, the Israeli gains, the Israeli fears and torment and pain and the joy of having hostages released, all of which is fair enough. The media should do that. But you see almost nothing comparable to talk about the Palestinian side, except these very vague generalizations that politicians make about the Palestinian suffering must be reduced and humanitarian aid must be surged. They like to use military terms because the U.S. is fundamentally abroad, is a military actor more than anything else. So they talk about surging this and doing that. So the really hard reality that the Israelis, Jews around the world, and Zionists and their supporters have to come to grips with is that in this last 100 or more years of the conflict between Zionism and Palestinian Arabism, Zionists have triumphed by creating a state, a very powerful state. And the Palestinians are almost helpless, but not totally helpless. And the Palestinians have resisted steadfastly in every possible way they can, and they continue to resist. And when the ceasefire happens in Gaza, which it will at some point, this is going to be a significant statement of the triumph of Palestinian resistance and national steadfastness and commitment to Palestinian people's rights in their homeland. And how those then enter into a political negotiation with the State of Israel to achieve an Israeli state and a Palestinian state living side by side, that's for the future to determine. We don't know how that's going to happen now. But the simple fact that the Palestinians continue to fight, continue to resist, refuse to be driven off their land. The Israelis tried everything they could in Gaza in the last 15 months or so to make the place physically inhabitable. No water, no agriculture, no hospitals, no schools, no electricity. It's incredible. No fuel, no medicine. They've tried every trick in the devil's book to drive the Palestinians out, force them out. Go to Sinai, go to Libya, go to Saudi Arabia. There's lots of room in northern Saudi Arabia. And the Palestinians would not go, except a few families that desperately needed to get medical care for their kids or something. And the Arabs, to their credit, refused to go along with this. And the Americans were trying to be involved. But this Israeli attempt to physically push the Palestinians out of Gaza did not succeed. And Hamas, amazingly, kept resisting. And you can criticize Hamas all you want, but if you only criticize Hamas and you don't mention what the Israelis are doing, you're an inconsequential, heartless, ethically empty liar. Nobody will believe you. But this is what happens among Western politicians. They focus on the rights of the Israelis, the pain of the Jews, and the Palestinians are always mentioned passively as some people suffering or the suffering needs to be improved. So all of these traditions, these patterns of the consequences of racism, apartheid, colonialism, predatory nationalistic Zionist religious fanaticism, all of these things have peaked now, and maybe they'll get worse. I don't think so. I think we've reached a moment where the Israelis have gone too far in their strategy, and the worst aspect of this was the combination of what they did in Lebanon and in Gaza and wiping out the whole Syrian defense system when the new government took over in Syria. So the Zionist extremist movement, which achieved the Jewish state in 48, remarkably, has never tried to find a way to protect that state by reaching agreements with the Palestinians and Arab neighbors and others who've all offered to coexist with the Jewish majority state of Israel as long as the Palestinians get the rights. They've never done it. They've played along. They've tricked us. They've come up with all kinds of diversionary tactics, and they're still doing it. But the reality is that what we have to achieve now, we meaning the people in the Middle East, but the whole world, is the single most important element, in my view, of a peaceful, rational, decent Middle East, which is to define Zionism. It's never been defined geographically, politically, demographically, or militarily. So what are the rights of Zionists? What does a Zionist state mean? Does it have the total right to do any military damage it wants around the region? If somebody in Pakistan seems to be planning to challenge the Israelis, are they going to go and kill them in Pakistan? Well, they've done that before in Iran and other places around the world. And so the danger now is that Israel's bloodbath that it is causing across the region will be allowed to continue. And with the same justification that Israel has a right to protect itself. But what we've seen is that this argument is losing power, losing support, and the steadfast resistance of the Palestinians is generating a lot of support. But the important thing there is that the Palestinian resistance, Hamas in particular, has repeatedly expressed officially in the media, in private letters to George Bush, to the Israeli prime minister, and to others, the Hamas has repeatedly expressed the willingness to coexist peacefully with Israel if basic Palestinian demands are met. And these demands are enshrined in UN resolutions. They're not just extreme Hamas demands. But the Israelis never respond. The Americans never respond. The Arab peace plan had all the Arab 22 states and another, I think, 57 Islamic majority states supporting the Arab peace plan of 2002, which said to the Israelis, we will live in peace with you if you withdraw from the 67 occupied lands and allow a Palestinian state to happen and find a resolution to the refugee issue that satisfies both sides. So nothing would be forced on the Israelis. Everything would be negotiated. But the Israelis never responded. The Americans never responded. And that's why people see what's happening now, and they go back to the idea that you mentioned before in Edward Said's Orientalist, that the imperial colonial Western dynamic combined with the Zionist dynamic has created a monster of predatory bloodbaths and geographical expansion stomping on the lives and rights of anybody in the region who dares to challenge Israel or Zionism. And so this is an awful position to be in if you're an Israeli. I mean, I know from experience, many Jews around the world are perturbed by this. They're bothered by it. They're not sure how to respond to it. But it's up to the Israelis in the first instance to do this, to define Zionism. And the world has to help the Israelis do this. The Israelis on their own are not going to suddenly say, oh, okay, we're going to, here's our border, we'll go back to the 67 border, we'll have security guarantees, we'll swap some lands, minimum settlements will be removed, the majority of settlers can stay where they are, and in return we swap lands. So the Israelis are not going to implement the very well-known parameters of a permanent and fair peace. They have to be pushed and cajoled and assisted militarily, financially, in security terms, and other ways to do this. And this is now missing. We don't have global leaders, very few around the world, who could do this. But this is a really critical requirement for the world to push on the Israelis and the Palestinians to move towards this kind of agreement. Because resolving the Palestine-Zionist conflict and the wider Arab-Israeli conflict is probably the single most important thing that could be done to bring about a peaceful, stable, productive, and joyful Middle East.
What does Samud mean in Arabic?
Samud means resistance, perseverance, steadfastness, all of these things together, that you hold your ground, you fight, you resist, You do what you can, militarily, politically, economically. You send your kids to school. You plant some trees. You write some poetry. All the things that people do to carry on the actions that prove that they are normal human beings. The Palestinians are just ordinary, normal human beings. There's nothing special about them, other than that they've been subjected to the most draconian settler colonial violence of anybody in the region in the last 120 years or so. Anybody else would have fought back in the same way that they did. And we saw this in South Africa, we saw in Algeria, all in India, all over, wherever colonialism happened, people held their ground as much as they could. And they suffered in big numbers. The Palestinians now have paid a huge price, 50, 60,000 dead in Gaza, probably 150,000 actually have died. The damage to human life and the structures of society is massive. But no colonial liberation has ever happened without people paying that kind of price, because the violence of the colonial settler occupiers is always the driving force. The colonial powers, whether it's Americans or British or French or Israeli, that they use to maintain their presence, to assert their superiority, to implement their racist apartheid type system. And the only way that you can confront that kind of violence is through military violence. People tried politically, you won't get anywhere. And of course, the American colonies tried it peacefully when they were starting out their life in the 1700s, and they tried to get the British Crown to give them representation and taxation together. The British Crown didn't, so the Americans took up arms and fought. This is human nature. It has nothing to do with who you are. The Jewish people in history did the same thing when they were subjugated by others. They tried to fight back, and they were defeated several times, and then by the Romans finally, and evicted from the small Jewish community in Palestine was evicted. And for 2,000 years, they have thought about how do they come back, and then they did. Not all Jews in the world wanted to come back, but some did, and Jews all over the world thought of different ways in which they could exhibit sumud, of steadfastness, as Jewish people, as citizens of Western countries, as people who would come back and settle in Palestine and live as a minority among an Arab majority, which is what many of them did, that there was always a 5-7% minority of Jews in the Arab world. Jews finally, or some Jews, came up with the idea of Zionism, hooked it up with British colonial imperialism, and off they went. And here we are. So they've now become the aggressors and the genociders, and people are opposing them any way they can. And you see it defiantly in the U.S., in the student movement, and particularly in the young progressive Jews. And they're not all so young. You get, middle-aged people, especially women, in the Jewish Voice for Peace and many other movements like that. Jewish Americans are challenging what the U.S. government is doing and what Israel is doing. And students have followed suit. And it's extraordinary how American students have made the Gaza genocide a global moral issue, maybe the most powerful and pervasive issue of global moral concern around the entire world in the last year and a half. But of course, the world could not muster the necessary power to change Israeli policy or American, British policy. But they kept trying, and they'll keep trying. And this is why Samud is so important. The Israelis now are going to go on a rampage in the West Bank. And there's, Samud is the critical dynamic. You got to hold your ground, figure out how you can protect yourself, get other people to assist, get other people to constrain the Israeli racist attackers. Every contest has its own dynamics, but we see certain commonalities among them all.
The actual Gaza death toll, according to the respected British medical journal The Lancet, is undercounted by 40%. I mean, that's a staggering figure. You mentioned how many tens of thousands killed in Gaza. But let's focus a bit on the West Bank. since Gaza has, for good reason, had much of the media coverage, albeit what it is, how limited it is, almost 1,000 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank since October 7th, not only by the Israeli military, but by settlers. Thousands more have been imprisoned, many without charge. The Israeli population of the settlements, the colonies, is more than 700,000. That includes East Jerusalem. The population of Israeli colonies in the Syrian Golan Heights is over 20,000. Very little reporting is done on this particular issue of settler colonialism.
The mainstream Western press has been conditioned through various techniques to not report on these aspects of Zionism and the State of Israel or American foreign policy, all three of which form a single unit. But this is also breaking down. There's two powerful forces that are at play, or two and a half. One is social media. There's all kinds of stuff on social media that gives anybody in the world who's interested a clear, direct, immediate, accurate view with video of what's happening. And you can hear the voices of the Palestinians. The second one is the progressive press in the United States. People like yourself, like Mondo Weiss, like Electronic Intifada, like there's a dozen major alternative media who really provide powerful, accurate information about the reality of both the actions of the Israelis and the supportive actions of the U.S. government. And the third one, the one I call half, is you're starting to see in the mainstream media, in NPR, in the New York Times, in other publications, you're starting to see reporting about the racist, apartheid, genocidal actions of the Israeli government and the link to American support. This is happening in small bits here and there, but it's starting to happen in a way that never happened before. This is an important sign. And of course, the mainstream media doesn't do this because they are so well-intentioned. They do this because they understand if they keep ignoring the realities of what the Israelis are doing with American support in perpetuating a genocide, they're going to lose readers, they're going to lose advertisers. And these are commercial entities. They have to get an audience to be able to sell dog food advertising to be able to make money. And if they start losing their audience, which is happening now, this is the one of the most important dynamics under the radar, that younger people in the United States under the age of, say, 40, 45, almost never read the mainstream media, the New York Times or Time Magazine or whatever, and more of them don't watch CNN and MSNBC and Fox and the cable networks, that they mostly get their news and views and analysis from the alternative media, from social media, and from personal contacts through their links with advocacy groups that are advocating for justice, which usually means advocating for Palestinian rights alongside Israeli rights. And this change is really one of the most, I think, important signs of the gradual change that I've been pointing out across different sectors of Western society, including the legal system, the political system, and the media and grassroots organizing. All of those things tend to happen together, and we're starting to see them. It took a century for the Western mainstream media to start to understand that, well, there are these Palestinians whose land has been taken away from them, and we're starting to see better reporting a little bit in the mainstream media. The majority of mainstream media is not doing very good, but you're getting glimmers that never existed. And then the other two I mentioned, social media and alternative media, are expanding all the time. And by the way, why have the Israelis essentially failed to achieve their three major goals in Gaza related to Hamas? To wipe them out, to make sure that they make no further security threats to Israel, and that they have no role in the future governance of Palestine. That's all three of those things the Israelis have failed. This is important for people to understand.
Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
You were just listening to Rami Khoury, War or Peace in the Middle East. This program is produced by Alternative Radio. We're an independent nonprofit in our 39th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature such voices as Ilan Pape, Ralph Nader, Peter Beinert, Francesca Albanese, and Chris Hedges. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Rami Khoury, War or Peace in the Middle East, and for Rashid Khalidi's classic book, The 100 Years' War on Palestine, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us 1-800-444-1977. Special thanks to KGNU. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening. We go out with Mohammed Youssef singing in Arabic, Mawtani, my homeland.
Mawtani, Mawtani, الجمال والجلال والسناء والبهاء في رباك في رباك والحياة والنجاة والهناء والرجاء في هواك في هواك.
What is the forest industry most afraid of? Shifting the conversation from saving old growth to protecting what's left of BC's primary forests, areas with minimal human disturbance and far greater ecological value than tree farms. Save What's Left Conservation Society is a volunteer-run group at the forefront of the movement to save the last remnants of unprotected primary forest through seeking reforms to the government agency, BC Timber Sales. Learn more at savewhatsleft.ca, find us on social media, and please support our vital work through our website.